It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 27th day of November 2019, the night before Thanksgiving in the United States, and the last prayer meeting Wednesday of November 2019. This is the Horn Headon.live is where we is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. I had a note from I think it was Zed, saying that he was having a hard time doing the podcast from Headon.live. Not sure what that problem is, but I have a feeling it'll get sorted out. Just really don't know, but thank you for letting me know just the same. We're gathering together in the Horn chat room, where in the 3 hours in which this program is live, there transpires a merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is moderated, of course, by longtime and veteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky on all days except Wednesdays. Like doctors, Sparky takes Wednesdays off. So if you pop on by and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password, if you don't already have one, well, you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Squeaky and Will in Chicago, all having arrived early and before the tardy bell. Heck, we don't even have one. We've only got a cowbell. So there's that. Yes, this program is live, and we'll prove it by dealing with some issues of the day somewhere along the way. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Where was I? Yeah, this program, like every other, begins with gratitude. Thanks to our 27th of the month subscriber, and that would be Robert in Australia. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very, very kindly for being one of the merry band that helps knock out about a quarter of the Horn's fundraising need over the course of any given month. Thank you very much indeed. And of course, we are in the midst of fundraising free radio because of the subscribers who knock out that week. And this is the week that they knock out, the final week every month. Thank you. Hey, Randy and PA, thanks for letting me know. Hot on all five Horn streams. Randy says the podcast app on Catalina OS on the Mac is cranky. So that might explain some of it. Thank you. Thanks for letting us know, Randy. Huh. Let's see. Yeah, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, all right. And being as how we met our fundraising goal and everything, and we've got fundraising free radio this week, that means the deacons got the night off. And even the little old blue-haired ladies are beginning to sort of get themselves aligned with the way things work here. Because they seem to produce the most let us say, dense meals on the final prayer meeting Wednesday of the week. And this being the night before Thanksgiving, the little old blue-haired ladies outdid themselves. They'll all be doing their own Thanksgiving dinners tomorrow, but in the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall Kitchen, they produced, yes indeed, a traditional Thanksgiving dinner for the ages. I mean, there it was, the roasted turkey. The little old blue-haired men took the turkeys out and gently poured the hickory smoke to them, about 200 degrees for about an hour apiece, just to get that smokiness in there. It propped them on there so that the cavity was getting the smoke up into it. These little things, they matter. And then they brought them in, and each one was lovingly roasted by the little old blue-haired ladies, saving back all the delicious smoky broth, which brethren and sistren they then used for gravy, and saved some back for the base for later makings. They'll make it and put it away after the turkey, after the deacons have done a more thorough job cleaning the turkey carcasses than a buzzard usually can do with a deer on the side of the road. I mean, it'll just, the bones will be shining, but the little old blue-haired ladies will make turkey carcass soup because it's delicious, you know, turkey carcass and the broth with the carrots and the onions and the peas and the potatoes and, yes, lentils. Red lentils add a particularly vibrant quality to turkey carcass soup. But they made the sweet potato croquettes, you know, a marshmallow with sweet potato wrapped around it, rolled in butter and then rolled in crushed up cornflakes and baked. And the mashed potatoes, of course, of course. And they opened up cans of both kinds of cranberry sauce, the jellied and the whole berry, because, well, we didn't want any wars breaking out over the fellowship hall table. No, 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 no. Oh, they did it upright. They baked pan after pan after pan of cornbread. They baked sheet after sheet after sheet pan of biscuits. They chopped celery. They chopped onions. They rubbed fresh leaves of sage. They ground fresh black pepper. They used some of the turkey broth to wet it all down, the biscuits, the cornbread, the French bread croutons, and they made dressing, and it was heavenly. And I have to tell you, brethren and sistren, that the deacons are very nearly catatonic. It was rather pitiful, really, to see them stuff themselves with all that turkey and dressing and mashed potatoes and gravy. Yeah. And the sweet potato croquettes and the cranberry sauce. And it was as though it was some sort of a compulsion. They couldn't help themselves. Still, they trundled and lumbered over to the dessert table and laid on the pumpkin pie and the pumpkin cheesecake with a will. There's not a chance, brethren and sistren, as I stand here in the pulpit, there's not a chance of them so much as moving. I think I could probably bounce tennis balls off their heads and nothing would happen. They're in a deeply induced, deeply tryptophan-induced post-Thanksgiving Day stupor. And here's the scary part. They're going to do it at home all over again tomorrow. See, I knew I'd have to be talking, so I knew I'd be in the pulpit, so I laid back. I held back. I'll have mine, about 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or a little thereafter after I get done sitting in for Mike Malloy. And in the quiet of the fading evening, I will knock myself silly with all that wonderful turkey. I do love the dark meat so very much. Rich and yes, yummy. Yummy. So, the deacon, like I said, the deacons knew they had the light off, and they made the best of it. But if they start snoring, well, there are some things up with which I will not put. Oh, that's a nice idea. I need to add that sometime. Randy in PA says, one side dish that is an acquired taste, but is high in iron, is pearl barley cooked in chicken or turkey broth. Oh, I love pearl barley. And if you were to take that and cook it and add some quinoa into that, that would be fan-freaking-tastic. And, of course, you could make it a little more, a little less healthy and more decadent by maybe, oh, cooking the skin off of a piece of hog jowl in it while it goes. Whoo! Yes! Glory! Hallelujah! So as the deacons slumber, I'll try not to be screaming and carrying on too much during these 2 hours that we have together this evening before Thanksgiving 2019. Shh. They twitch a little in their sleep and sort of rub their faces and every now and then a deacon. We've got an usher, not Brother Usher Steve, but we've got an usher who comes along from time to time and deals with the little line of drool that runs out of these catatonic deacons out of the corner of their mouths, because I can't even stand to see the deacons humiliate themselves like they've done today. It's just pitiable. But I think they had a damn fine time doing it, and it's a damn good thing that we didn't bring out the little old blue-haired ladies didn't load up some holiday eggnog with some dark rum or some bourbon, because I can't even bear the thought. Fortunately, it's not that kind of cathedral. So, brethren and sistren, instead of doing the altar call, we'll let the deacons snooze, and we'll just get to the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian news of the day. We should probably start in Florida. For those who don't know, the American Episcopal Church arose out of the Anglican Church, the Church of England. And the Episcopals were pretty happy being Episcopals for a good long while. You know, what's the nickname? The Frozen Chosen, I think Jim told me once. Others refer to them as Roman Catholic Light. But speaking of light, the American Episcopal Church saw it a while back. And they opened their doors, their arms, and their hearts to the LGBTQ community. And they also opened their priesthood to women. All perfectly rational, reasonable things to be doing toward the very end of the 20th century and the beginnings of the 21st. But it did not sit well with some of your more traditional orthodox type Episcopals in the United States. So they broke away and they formed a sort of splinter Frozen Chosen. And they call themselves the Anglican Church in the United States. And they oppose ordaining women. They don't like the Homer sectionals. And they try to run right up against the Roman Catholicism without just begging to be let back in. Although the Roman Catholic Church did do that a while back. They said, hey, if you're Episcopal and you don't like all this this squishy modern liberalism of not hating gay people and letting women take a natural and normal position in the priesthood, well, come on over. But there were some folks who still got the, well, they got a little case of the shivering horrors about having to bow a knee to the Pope at Rome. And so they stayed Anglican Church in the United States. And there's one of those in Tallahassee, Florida, brethren and sistren. It's not at all ironically, St. Peter's Anglican Cathedral. You know, our dear friend, the late, great Peter Godbold, lived not far from Tallahassee, Florida, but I don't think he would have been welcome at St. Peter's Anglican Cathedral because they preached a whole lot of anti-LGBT religious bigotry. And leading among them was Father Eric Dudley. Now, Dudley's one of those merry oldie English names. If you look back in English history, you'll find a Dudley advising Elizabeth I back when she was queen. Well, this Robert Dudley, I mean, this Eric Dudley is the priest at St. Peter's Anglican Anti-LGBT Church. Everybody knows Prayer Meeting Wednesday so well by now that I'm sure you already know where this story is going, and well, yes, of course. Father Eric Dudley founded the church. And shortly thereafter, well, the unhappy news broke. Father Eric Dudley was discovered to have given gifts to some of the younger men in the congregation. He'd have them to dinner and pay for their meals and, more importantly, their drinks. And we're not talking about Earl Grey. He'd pay for their books and tuition for a college course. He'd pay for a clothes shopping spree or a used car. He'd pay for airline tickets. He gave one of the young men one of his personal cassocks with some $1,500 value. And some of the time, the money came out of the rector's discretionary fund. Rector damn near killed her. Sorry, couldn't resist. The greatest little Johnny joke of all time. At 6:17 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Brother Deacon Asa asks, was Father Dudley caught with a man in his mouth? Well, like I said, you know where these stories always go. The report was prepared by a group called GRACE, G-R-A-C-E, which stands for Godly Response to Abuse in a Christian Environment. And yes, with all of these gifts and all of these expenditures, Father Dudley was, in fact, grooming some young men for some quality time. Quality time that involved him putting his head in their laps or holding their hands or touching their feet and, well, caressing them. Reminds me of years, years, years back. As a young graduate student in theater at the University of Alabama, we threw a cast party at the end of a Shakespeare production. And the guy who had played, he'd had to come in at the last moment to play our Prospero because our Prospero broke his leg while out horseback riding. And so this was a professional equity actor. And nobody told the cast that he was in recovery. And so we threw the party at the end of the run, at the end of the production, the so-called after party. And, well, it happened at my apartment. And the next thing you know, there's a knock on the door. And there stands our Prospero, sockless drunk. Nobody had gotten him that way. But he was sockless drunk, and he had a 12-pack of Bush beer under his arm. And came in and proceeded to lose his mind. What does all this have to do with the story? Well, it has to do with Father Eric Dudley touching young men's feet and caressing them. In our case, our Prospero sat on a couch, schwasted, and began looking at a lovely young woman from the cast, and in true Foster Brooks fashion, declared, "You have lovely feet." And about 5 minutes later, he'd lean over and say, "Let's tell you, you have lovely feet." Sorry, it's the power of memory. But that's what Father Eric Dudley was doing with some young men there at the notoriously anti-LGBT St. Peter's Anglican Church. Because, well, because of course. One of the young men who was being groomed told the investigators from Grace, "Part of me is going like, this is super strange. That's weird. And another part's going, this can't be happening. Eric is known as the guy who hates gay people. We're the church that built our church based on anti-homosexuality. He kind of has a caricature out there. So no way this guy is coming on to me. I'm misreading him. I'm misunderstanding this situation." No, he wasn't. That's just proof that denial is not just a river in Egypt. Father Dudley, having been defrocked by the Anglican Church in North America, has written a letter apologizing to and asking forgiveness from those affected but by my inappropriate actions. Please pray for their peace. I also apologize to this congregation and the church. I'm deeply sorry and have earnestly repented before God. Earnestly, as in angelly, as in I did not make him come. So not quite caught with a man in his, but close. Had it not, yeah. That's where it was headed. But anytime you see one of these hotbeds of anti-LGBTQ religion, you will, if you just play the odds, you'll never go broke betting that somewhere in there, there's some serious CLOSET action going on. That's right. Ralph's serving as the ad hoc horn research department this evening. Robert Dudley, 1st Earl of Leicester, a favorite of Queen Elizabeth, among other things. His first wife died from a fall down the stairs. See also the death of Mary, Queen of Scots, as performed by Monty Python. "Are ye Mary, Queen of Scots?" "Yes." And what comes after. Well, thank you, Steve, in New York. Here's wishing you a very happy Thanksgiving and safety in everyone's travels. Thank you, Steve. And the same to you. You, like everyone else, are dear members of this community. Far more truly a matter of being of the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. Now, that's about as unicky as prayer meeting Wednesday is going to get. It's been a while since we've heard from Coach Dave Daubenmeyer, but what? Well, it wouldn't be Wednesday without him, would it? Yeah, this is just too much fun to pass up. Coach Dave, you'll recall that Coach Dave managed to save his daughters from being turned into short-haired, large posteriored lesbians only through the power of prayer when they went off to college to play softball. It was yesterday morning as he fired up the old YouTube to explain to people in his tax-free broadcast, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah, all about what's going on with the impeachment proceedings. And seeing as how we've been just innocently watching the testimony and weighing the evidence and that sort of thing. Well, apparently, according to Coach Dave, there's more to it than that. And by the way, getting back to Father Dudley, Brother Deacon Asa says, "I swear, Your Honor, that boy just had his dick out in the vestibule and I happened to fall on it with my mouth open," said Father Dudley in a deposition. God damn. Oh, I don't ever, I mean, it's bad enough inside my brain. I don't ever want to live in yours. Not even, no. Thank God there's no movie out there called Being Brother Deacon Asa. It might be worse than Videodrome. But anyway, back to Coach Dave. America has a demon problem.
If we don't have any idea how our enemy operates, do we have any idea how to fight? See, my opinion, Adam Schiff is a demon. Demon possessed or a non-human. I don't know which one. Nancy Pelosi, she's either demon possessed, in my opinion, or non-human.
Why does he bother adding "in my opinion"? Isn't that, I consider that statement to be superfluous, especially in light of the fact that the only non-humans are, well, the rest of the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, and the mineral kingdom, and none of those are able to be sentient and communicative. Although one could easily argue that Coach Dave here is, in fact, dumber than a box of rocks.
The average 83-year-old woman is not in Washington, D.C. trying to control the world.
Well, okay, I guess I can take a hand in that game. Nancy Pelosi is far and away not the average 83-year-old woman.
She's home sitting around baking cookies with her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren.
Well, the female contingent, and well, most of the male contingent, for that matter, of the Horn Family Community Congregation are just, Jesus Christ. Cookie baking. That's the sum and substance of one's golden years when one is female, I suppose. Yeah, I wonder if he thinks that Elise Stefanik, that rising star of the maggot contingent of the House. I wonder if he thinks that she should be home baking cookies too.
And passing on her legacy to her family. She's not in Washington, D.C. You say, how can Adam Schiff so easily lie? Well, there's your answer. He's either demon-possessed or he's not a real human being.
Like a golem or something? I'm really, really not up on my Kabbalah. But I don't think Adam Schiff is a golem. But this is where these maggot freaks are. The evidence is so overwhelming. The evidence is so compelling that their only arguments are, well, it's not real. And it's not real because demons. You know, if I wasn't planning, and program note, we will be doing Thanksgiving on the front porch tomorrow evening. And if I wasn't planning on doing that, I might wrap the program up after I wrap up the program and after I wrap up the Malloy program. And I might dive headfirst into the wide-mouthed end of a bottle of Old Panther just to kill off the brain cells that actually heard this freak say that Adam Schiff, a decent, honest, and upright man, a good man, arguably by the standards promulgated in their holy book, a godly man, is a demon.
I'm telling you this. There are non-humans walking the earth.
There he is, infringing on Alex Jones's corner. Next thing you know, old Coach Day will be talking about monkey jellyfish hybrids for sale in the bazaar, the narrow back alley bazaars of old Kowloon.
Somebody give me an amen on that. There are non-human entities walking.
Amen.
I'm just telling you.
Amen, Coach. Amen.
Huh?
Well, there are non-human entities walking the earth. Fuck! There's elephants. There's also non-human entities swimming the earth. Dolphins. Orcas. Humpback whales. Sperm whales. Whom I'm sure Coach Dave here thinks are gay. You know, because sperm. I mean, there's little tiny purple squids that live at 3,000 feet below the surface of the ocean. I saw some video from a deep sea remote operated vehicle. It was a cute little fella. Had these big sad puppy dog eyes. Probably eat you if you got close enough to it and it had a fighting chance, or at least try to, gnaw your arm off. I don't think that that's what Coach Dave means, though.
Some of them probably in positions of high authority in America.
Okay. If that's the case, then we can make the argument that one of them is Donald J. Trump. Oh, no, that's he's God's chosen one. Hey, oh, that's true. Brother Deacon Asa, foul, re-baking cookies. No fair. The cooking can be a fine pastime for the little women is hate Pastor Steven Anderson's hustle. Why is Coach not a Coach Dave infringing on his racket? Is there no honor among thieves? Well, they're a little short-handed on it. I remember he's working Alex Jones's corner, too. But he really, as hard as Dave may try, and he does try, he really can't hold a candle to Rick Wiles. Rick Wiles recently announced that, by God, he's gonna hang it up and quit. Because God hasn't given him the bajillion dollars he needed for a jet and a boat and a worldwide network of anti-Semitic poison. But Rick Wiles isn't necessarily arguing that the impeachment is being driven by demons or non-humans. No, for Rick Wiles, it's a lot simpler than that, because religion.
That's the way the Jews work. They are deceivers. They plot. They lie. They do whatever they have to do to accomplish their political agenda. This impeach Trump movement is a Jew coup. And the American people better wake up to it really fast, because this thing...
To quote the late, great late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, prior to November 22, 1963, groups of pro-Cuban or pro-Castro pigeons were heard drinking in bars saying, "Coo, coo." But Rick Wiles is so proud of himself, he made a rhyme. Impeachment is a Jew coup. I'm expecting that any moment now, as he always does, Brother Deacon Asa will respond, "He ain't saying it right. It's Jew." Give him a chance, Brother Deacon.
He is moving now towards a vote in the House and then a trial in the Senate. We could have a trial by before Christmas. This country could be in civil war at Christmas time.
That's right.
Members of the U.S. military are going to have to take a stand, just like they did in the 1860s with the Civil War. They're going to have to decide, are you fighting for the North or the South? Members of the government are going to have to take a side. Instead of North, South, it's going to be left or right.
He'd damn sure get a kick out of that, wouldn't he? Sick bastard.
People are going to be forced, possibly by this Christmas, to take a stand because of this Jew coup in the United States. We have weeks to stop it. That's why I'm speaking out. That's why I'm putting everything on the line, saying this is a coup led by Jews to overthrow the constitutionally elected president of the United States.
Wonder why he says it has to happen by Christmas. Think he might be trying to, I don't know, leverage some good old-fashioned Christian anti-Semitism? Is that possible? Because let's remember, long before Bill O'Reilly created the war on Christmas over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, back about 1921, Henry Ford was complaining in the pages of his deeply anti-Semitic personal megaphone newspaper that some people, you know, some people, were reporting to him in 1921 that they were having a difficult time finding Merry Christmas greeting cards. Did you know that? Did you know that it goes that far back? So Henry Ford, on a rumor at best, declares and decides and declares that a shortage in Christmas greeting cards was a Jewish conspiracy against Christmas. Back in 1921, Ford wrote, "Last Christmas, most people had a hard time finding Christmas cards that indicated in any way that Christmas commemorated someone's birth." Someone's. Huh. I seem to recall that the White Wing went absolutely bananas when, in regard to September 11th, 2001, Representative Ilhan Omar said some people did some things. But I'll bet you if you showed him a quote that quote from Henry Ford in 1921, yeah, I'll bet you they'd jump in right alongside it and agree that it was gospel truth.
And it's beyond removing Donald Trump. It's removing you and me. That's what's at the heart of it.
Jesus Christ. Hear that again. This is the stuff of which pogroms and holocausts are made.
Saying this is a coup led by Jews to overthrow the constitutionally elected president of the United States. And it's beyond removing Donald Trump. It's removing you and me. That's what's at the heart of it.
That's right.
Yeah. The Jews are trying to kill white Christian people. Never mind the fact that we haven't had any Jewish people go into Christian houses of worship and blow away the worshipers there. Oh, hell no. That was a good Christian boy in South Carolina. That was another good Christian man in Texas. This is a serious philosophical question. Would we really stop being free in the United States if we enacted some kind of hate speech legislation? If our legislative bodies were to acknowledge that there are some kinds of speech that are so vitriolic, so vituperative, and so utterly vulgar, such hate-freighted filth, that it would be a wrong to say them out loud? Would we be less free? I mean, we already have certain laws like that on the books. There are just some things you can't say about certain people in this country, not religious groups. Rick Wiles and the Nazis and the skinheads and the white nationalists and the Proud Boys and those sick bastards, they can scream, "Jews will not replace us," at the tops of their sickening, sick, disgusting lungs. On the other hand, you cannot suggest that certain individuals should be put out of our misery. Because then you'll get a visit from extremely humorless individuals who do not take nearly so broad a view of the First Amendment as what's out there. But the limitation exists, and the limitation is, in fact, deemed constitutional. But let it sink in that the Rick Wileses of the world are out there doing this stuff every day, 24/7. And they do these things because they hope, and he admits it, he wants people to start being killed in the United States on or before Christmas Day 2019. It's not a joke. It's not parody. It's not satire. It's no art. It has no redeeming social, political, cultural, or artistic value. None of that. So why is Rick Wiles allowed to vomit it into our body politic? And he wasn't even done.
You have been taken over by a Jewish cabal, a Bolshevik revolution, and I'm going to tell you, the Church of Jesus Christ, you're next. Get it through your head. They're coming for you. There will be a purge. That's the next thing that happens when Jews take over a country. They kill millions of Christians.
That is so mind-numbingly ignorant, stupid, hateful, and wrong that I'm hard-pressed to even deconstruct it. It's what Jews do when they take over a country. And the Jews are going to kill all the Christians in the United States. He's arguing that. He's doing it with a straight face. There's no giggling involved. There's no laugh track. Because it's no laughing matter to make allegations like this. There are how many million Jewish people in the United States? What percentage of them are a tiny minority of the percentage of people who own massive amounts of ammunition and tremendous arsenals of firearms in this country? It is not even remotely possible. And of course, this is just a 2019 extension of the blood libel. And yet he'll be back next week talking the same sickening filth. And of course, nothing will be done about it. But one of these days, somebody's going to take Rick Wiles up on his paranoid fantasy. Brother Deacon Asa, who is quite the archivist of this program, notes that if you recall, Pastor Stephen Anderson wanted all the LGBT people genocided by Christmas back in 2014. These freaks have a fascination with massacres before Christmas. And that's because the Christmas story itself has a massacre in it. It is called The Slaughter of the Innocents, in which Herod, the bad guy in the set piece, having been told that the king of the Jews has been born, and he, Herod, already being quite busy being the king of the Jews, has all of the up to a year old, I think, maybe 2 years old, can't remember, male children in his kingdom slaughtered. Now, that's disgusting. It's horrifying. It also never happened. But it's part and parcel of the iconography of this bloodiest of all modern religions. Damn. But it all does make sense if you know where these freaks are coming from. It's just bizarre. But if you want, if you want to see what passes for an endorsement by a celebrity of Trump and his Christianity, well, let's check in with somebody we haven't heard from in a while. Duck Doofus, Phil Robertson. He used to have a show called Duck Dynasty. And somebody had him on a TV program over on Glenn Beck's failing, flailing operation. And Duck Doofus, who knows about as much about science as, say, a duck knows about line dancing, well, see, he understands why Trump is like he is, and like he was, and like he will be. Worlds without end.
And by the way, just so the audience know, this is the third, it's actually the fourth conversation since 2016 that Dad has had. The first one, the first two, Trump was not president yet. And so we met him in D.C. at an event, and that was just to shake his hand. And Trump was more like, yeah, I love this guy. He stays at our hotel. Remember, that was just real topical. And then the second time, you actually shared the gospel with him. That was right before he got elected. And then the third time, he called you to congratulate you on your book. And in that conversation, as you said this, he said, Phil, you're one of the wisest men in America. You remember when he said that? So what he said about Dad. So he has seen that and realized. So this, the conversation you had with him at the rally was the fourth conversation.
That showed us that he's not anti-God.
That's exactly
well,
right.
Well, right.
And come out of a like tough
he's evolving in the right direction.
And like I said, I know his sons, especially Donald Trump Jr. I mean, we've had many conversations. We're going back.
I mean, we've killed all kinds of shit together. I know them's Christians because they ain't afraid to kill shit. I mean, they kill ducks and wounded cheaters and they go out and they'll pay good money to blow away a elephant. Cause who don't want to kill an elephant in the name of Jesus Christ?
Back and forth on the phone while the president was speaking, because Trump Jr. said, "Hey, did you talk to Dad?" I was like, "Well, I sent the other members of my family, but it's fine. We're all good." And he's like, "What's he talking about?" And I was like, "Well, right now,
well, dipshit, turn on the TV and find out." I can't. I lost the clicker. 'Nights like this, mighty hard not to, with the swirly straw. But probably the most delightful and hilarious aspect of any of this is a recent, what's that? Renee says, "Tales from the Biblical Crypt." You mean to tell me St. George never slayed a dragon? Not even one? Say it ain't so, Bob. I'm sorry, Renee. It's twoo. It's twoo. But if you want the real prayer meeting Wednesday genuine giggle, well, look no further than that noted purveyor of bucket pudding, Jim Baker. Oh, yes, yes, yes. Brother Jim Baker has discovered something special, a special power, a special purpose, if you will, for the God Emperor, Donald Trump. Come on. Oh, I do hate it when this happens. Let's try that again. Because this is, like I said, this is just too funny. There we go. Why is it not playing? Well, you know, got tattoo. Damn it. Jim Baker.
Do you want to see a chart that you'll blow your mind? I just got this from one of my newsmen here in the staff. You see that? You see what this is? This is the lowest earthquake. Look, we're going along with earthquakes. This is earthquakes. And then look at down here.
Amazing.
Well, you want to know what that is?
That's actually Donald Trump's EKG from last Saturday. And the Q wave's not looking good. But no, he got it from one of his newsmen on the staff. You know, one of the people that answers the phone and fulfills bucket pudding orders. And it purports to be a graph of earthquakes over the years. And well, we'll let Jim explain it.
That's the election of Donald Trump. Why would there be a dip in the earthquakes at the time of the election?
Well, why would there be a rise in the earthquakes after the election? Because the only way you get a dip like that on a chart is if things start going up again after the dip. And even the crowd wasn't much into it. Maybe they were sated on bucket pudding like it is with the deacons this evening on the turkey. But somebody in the back, if you heard him, went, "Wow." I had no idea that Missouri had become a legal marijuana state. Wow. So as it turns out, some folks did some research, folks over at Right Wing Watch, for instance. And in 2016, the number of earthquakes on Earth was about the same as it was before and, well, after. In fact, in 2016, the number of earthquakes was slightly higher. Jim Baker may as well have done this in Sharpie. But we're rational, intelligent human beings. Over in the trailer court where Emery and Marveline are in the matching Barca loungers, not so much. But there was a maggot rally in Florida yesterday evening. And be aware that here in fairly short order, you're probably going to start hearing a lot about the war on Thanksgiving. Because Nitwit Nero started talking about it last night because he'd seen a package on it on, of course, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And he also gave us a tell. At nearly 3 years, and four if you count the campaign, we've all become more than a little bit adept at figuring out the not particularly difficult to sort out anatomy of a Trump lie. And so last night at his maggot rally, he said that major media outlets had reported that he'd had a massive heart attack, and that's why he had to make that sudden, unexplained trip to Walter Reed. The only problem is there weren't any major media outlets alleging he'd had a massive heart attack. But according to the account from last night's maggot rally, he was just having a physical. And he said, "The first thing they do is say, 'Take off your shirt, sir, and show us that gorgeous chest. We've never seen a chest quite like it.'" This is, of course, pure bullshit. Because, well, there's nothing particularly gorgeous about the chest of a guy who weighs about 250 pounds and is very close to morbidly obese. One, personally, I think that he saw an ad on TV, the spirochetes grabbed it, the dementia got hold of it, the budding Alzheimer's rolled it around a little bit, and what? Instead of "show us that gorgeous chest," he actually heard someone say, "Roll that beautiful bean footage." the first thing they do is say, because there were multiple people around him staring in wide-eyed wonder at the magnificence of the Trumpian chest, and show us that gorgeous chest. Maybe melanoma was standing there with her new kidneys? I got nothing. And then he recounted a story from Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, the governor who got into the Florida governor's office with the assistance of Nazis. And he tells the Florida crowd a Ron DeSantis story. One day I'm with him and I pat him on the shoulder and I go, "Whoa, that's strong. That's a lot of muscle there. My hand didn't sink in like it does with a lot of people." And then I see him without a shirt one day, and this guy's strong. He's not fat. That's all power. That's all muscle. I want to tell you that. And the maggots went wild. Regarding the Trumpian torso, Brother Deacon Asa says, "I've been told Trump's chest hair is the toast of two continents, Bob." Says Jim, "Those tired tits? Oh, no." Cowbell for tired Trump tits. Either that or dinner in the Central Time Zone just went straight to hell. And so then something else happened. No one said anything about him having a heart attack, but he mentioned a massive heart attack. It's possible when those things are happening that if you get up in front of it, you get into the hospital on your own steam. Bernie, you may recall, was not carried into the hospital on a gurney, was he? Rolled in on a stretcher? Flown in on a helicopter like the beginning of MASH? No. But no one was talking heart attack. I mean, here at the Horn, most of us speculated that he probably refused to play with his, refused to put his clothes on, was standing around playing with himself, stark naked, like we've predicted eventually he will do. No one said anything about heart attacks, but there he is in Florida saying, "They said I had a massive heart attack." And then just to put a big, floppy, flesh-colored bow, orange in this case, on the whole thing. Today, he tweeted an image of the body of Rocky Balboa with his head photoshopped on top of it. You know, there's no world. I don't care how many fucking alternate universes there are. There's no world in which that is even remotely normal. Or sane. Or undelusional. No, we've got some medical professionals, some psychological professionals in the congregation. If you had a patient that was doing this kind of stuff, would it be a breach of the standard of care not to do something about it as quickly as possible? How much weirder can all of this get? Don't ask. I just did. I'm sorry. Lately, there's been news that he's trying to rig the Senate trial on impeachment, demanding that he have a trial because I want to testify.
They have no right to impeach me, but I want to testify.
Well, what passes for a White House strategy is to try to rig the trial on the front end. So they've been giving away Camp David vacations to maggot senators in an effort to woo the said senators. And because the goddess of irony, well, is the goddess of irony, recently, according to a report last week in the New York Times, the White House had a script at Camp David, or not at Camp David, I'm sorry, during a White House visit, he hosted maggot senators to watch Joker with him. Yeah, the reviews are kind of iffy about Joker, but it's Joaquin Phoenix and it's Robert De Niro. And it's about the supervillain and how he becomes the supervillain in the Batman series. And of course, the Joker is a sick and twisted individual. And maggot members of the House and maggot senators are just gushing about the wooing that they're getting. As far as the Senate is concerned, the fix is in. He was in bad shape last night. And yeah, some neurological professionals are beginning to beg for some kind of an intervention. In this case, it's Seth Davin Norholm, who's an associate professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Emory in Atlanta. He was slurring again last night as he declared, "You know, we just set another stock rocket. You saw that, right? The stock market." This led Dr. Norholm to jump on Twitter and say, "Sock rocket equals full neurological workup stat. Pharmacological? Perhaps. Stress? Maybe. Sleep deprivation? Likely. Organic cognitive decline? Quite possible. Unfit? Absolutely." And went on to produce the evidence.
"You know, we just set another stock rocket. You saw that, right? The stock market. You know, we just set another stock rocket. You saw that, right? The stock market."
Some of us, and I do not say this with any glee or joyful anticipation or anything like that. Some of us have posited that he may not be on the ticket in 2020 because nature may take its course. Now, as someone who does a radio program for 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week, the better part of 52 weeks a year, and has done so for 15 years, I do occasionally trip over my own tongue. It's unavoidable, especially when you're working without a script. And generally, I make light of it, because sometimes it's pretty funny. This ain't that. This is not that at all. And, you know, because we are way out in front of the curve, it's probably a good thing to remind for us to remind ourselves that some sort, that there is some sort of mental status exam, compulsory mental status exam statute at work in Washington, D.C. Could that be part of the mysterious visit to Walter Reed? Hang on a minute. Let's assume for a moment that he was telling the truth last night, and some medical staffer said, "Come on, Mr. President, let's see that gorgeous chest of yours." Because that sounds more like how it would be said. Well, why would a medical professional say something like that, that way, to someone like Donald Trump? I mean, I've got a pretty good goddamned idea why. Because he's out of his tree. Because they can't get him from point A to point B anymore without dosing him to the gills, and they've been dosing him for at least a year. And when you're dosing for that, you do eventually reach a point of diminishing returns. You know, there are anti Alzheimer's drugs out there. I think one of them is Aricept. And if you catch it early, Aricept can delay the onset of the worst of the symptoms, but they do not cure. And eventually, it just doesn't work anymore. So, applying Occam's razor, and viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to its proponent, what is the more likely fact? That Donald Trump just swanned over to Walter Reed Hospital because he had a sudden hankering for a physical, and that when he got there, all the doctors looked at him in wide-eyed wonder at what a marvel of a man he is and said, "Let's see that gorgeous chest, sir," and stood to attention and snapped a proper salute as the presidential shirt came off. Because they were so awed. Or is it more likely that a nurse said, come on, Mr. President, you can take your shirt off. Let's see that gorgeous chest, Mr. President. You know, maybe so that they could get the leads onto him for an EKG or something. You tell me. Because even though I'm the proponent of the notion that no matter how weird yesterday was, today was weirder, and no matter how weird today is, tomorrow's going to be weirder still, even though I'm the proponent of that, I still find myself kind of, you know, squinting and opening and squinting and opening and waiting for things to come back in focus and kind of shaking my head, because is there an upper limit to bizarre? Or lower? And I pointed out that the Walter Reed visit came after after the week of impeachment hearings, when the stress must have been bone-crushing for him. You know, what's the line from Elton John? Someone saved my life tonight. We've all gone crazy lately. My friends out there rolling around the basement floor. I'll leave it to you to provide the ooh. What do you think the maggots will do? If he falls ill and there's no way for the White House press shop to lie their way around it. And even as I speak, I know that I'm betting that Lee in New York is about to remind me of the Star Trek episode that dealt with this very issue. Sadly, I think we're bereft of Captain Kirks and Spocks at this point in time. £250, says Steve in New York. I'm actually a bit south of £250. That fucker's £350 if he's a pound. At 6'2"? Yeah. I mean, I think I topped out a few years ago at 260. I was somewhere between a 44 waist and a 46 waist pants, and my suit size had gone up to 52 long. And I have never felt worse in my life. And yeah, I'm hovering around 225 now. Still need to lose a little bit more. But beyond the political shenanigans, how do you look at him and say, "Well, no, he's a brilliant physical specimen. That's what he is." Note saying, and I'm going to leave the individual's name out of it. I have narcissist authoritarians within my family. The movies Rocket Man and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood are now showcasing this. The DSM has a very narrow view of this, but Trump would obviously qualify under the DSM definition. Not bone crushing, says Lee in New York. Bone spur crushing. Thank you for the correction. Meanwhile, a note from Lady B. Just a brief one. People like to trip. People like to trip about Trump's cognitive decline. Dude, I'm tripping about the evil intent of those who enable it. This moment of clarity, hi Clarity, brought to you by Lady B. Who, by the way, is working, as many are. On Thanksgiving. And a thought out, as she reminded me earlier, a thought out there for the people who will suffer the most in the modern era for this Thanksgiving, the people who work Black Friday store sales tomorrow. Lady B wrote, because this is the new normal, from The Guardian, Walmart offers Thanksgiving workers measly discount in place of holiday pay. Staff at retail giant not entitled to time and a half holiday pay. Walton family that owns Walmart worth more than $190 billion. And Lady B says, and to think Mike Bloomberg and Tom Steyer think that we think they could give a fuck about any of us regular people. We don't need overlords running this country. Fuck a maggot, fuck middle America, and fuck the fence sitters who can't decide. This isn't a Lifetime movie. The super rich aren't going to save the town from ruin and or marry your daughter. Vote for equal rights, a living wage, and national health care. Save the happy endings for your session at that shady-looking massage parlor. Lady B says, fuck, I'm tired. And I still got to start prepping for Thanksgiving. Sigh. Love having a large family. Loving turkey wings. Signed, Lady B. Lady B, one of these days, y'all got to, if you've never done it before, you got to make turkey carcass soup. Nothing like it. Wonderful a couple of days later. After you're all burned out on turkey, about 3 days later, serve up that turkey carcass soup on a cold, cold afternoon, lunchish. People will love you. They will worship at your shrine. But she's right. The billionaires aren't going to save us because the billionaires aren't interested in saving us, and the billionaires, for the most part, don't think we deserve saving in the first place. The people that billionaires save are other billionaires. We had to be up early this morning for an appointment. Had to take Ferg to Beckley. And so the alarm went off at 5 a.m., and I woke up and did my thing, turned on the news. Agnes went and made coffee. And in short order, my filthy morning habit came on. By the way, Lady B, you've got a note from Les out on the road. Les says, a fucking men, Lady B. But I'd say within the first 15 minutes of my filthy morning habit, there sat Donnie Deutsch, millionaire, who talks about how he's a self-made man, even though everything and how his grandfather came here with nothing and leaves out all the money he got left and the business he got left by his father, the son of his grandfather. But there it was this morning, a millionaire pontificating to millions of Americans, perhaps, about how we can't have Medicare for all. Elizabeth Warren's numbers have slid because she's not very likable, and she's kind of like a school principal, and Americans are turning away from her because they don't want to have their health care taken away. 160 million Americans don't want their health care taken away by Medicare for All. And it's a drumbeat. And it's not just that program. It's over on Fox News, TV, Radio, Rwanda, or CBS, or ABC. Does PBS have a morning program? I don't fucking know. But it's all there. 160 million people are going to lose their health insurance. Now, what kind of self-destructive politician would ever propose a health care reform that would put 160 million Americans out of their health care and just leave them flapping in the goddamn breeze? Until something else came along. Guess what? I don't care if it's Bernie's plan or Elizabeth Warren's plan. That ain't how it works. 160, it is simply a fact that 160 million people are not going to be without their health care. Just hold on there. Hold on there. You union members who are so deeply in love with your union health care that's only good as long as you have a union job. That's right. Building trades laborers. You just hold out there because we know you love your union health care plan that only provides you health care as long as you're not fucking laid off and as long as you're not engaged in seasonal goddamn work. Hold on there. We know you love your health care, but you just hold your diabetes at bay and don't worry, don't take your kids to the doctor. We'll have you Medicare for all here in a year or two. That is not how it works. People are transferred onto Medicare for all before we look at the billionaire health insurance executive class and say,
you're fired.
And it takes a tremendous degree of mendacity to argue otherwise. And there is never anybody on any of these goddamn panels to point that out. And I suppose that's the fundamental dishonesty of the multimillionaire for-profit media. It was positively delicious a couple of 3 days ago. A guy that I've come to deeply respect, Anand Giridharadas, author of a book called Winners Take All, about the wealth class, showed up on my Filthy Morning Habit. And in talking about, I think it was Michael Bloomberg, said, well, plutocrats gonna plute. And there sat Brett Stevens, privileged, supercilious recipient of wingnut welfare via the New York Times, a guy who denies campus rape, denies climate change, and is another one of those, you can't take the health care away from the people who love their for-profit health care and just leave them. Liar. But when Anand Giridharadas said, plutocrats going to plute, which was a great line, Brett Stevens jumped in and said, well, I don't think it's fair to be saying nasty things about our billionaires. They're nice people, too. This is America. And man, Anand Giridharadas was ready. He pounced. He looked at that supercilious twit who gets his maiden forms in a bunch when he gets tweeted at, or not even tweeted at, but tweeted about by a journalism professor in D.C. He looked at him and said, I know this is America. Don't tell me this is America. I'm from America. And it was like some sort of science fiction sonic wave. It just rolled across the set. Or it was like the Kwisatz Haderach had used to learn the voice of control without the weirding module. But they never have anybody on to refute that horse shit about people are going to lose their health care and just be out twisting in the wind while the progressive communists try to figure out a way to create some sort of Bolshevik paradise health care plan that... God damn! Apparently Les saw Anand Giridharadas do that too. A lot of people did. And because it was so refreshing to have one of these billionaires sycophants, one of these billionaire toe suckers, one of these billionaire lick spittles finally spoken to like they so richly fucking deserve to be spoken to. Yeah. Lee in New York says, taking health care away? I do know a group of politicians who were quite willing to take health care from tens of millions of Americans. The Republican Senate, minus John McCain. Yeah. And Nitwit Nero looked the maggots in the eye and said, "We're going to take your health care away, but you're still going to have pre-existing condition coverage, and it's going to be the best health care that we take away that you've ever had, and the prices are going to be less." And the maggots looked back at him and said, "Oh, okay, sure, why? Yes, sir, we believe you." Jack in Shreveport, subject line, Donnie Deutsch. Oh, fuck yeah. It was that exact statement that had me yelling fuck you at Deutsch on the fucking TV this morning. 160 million people are going to lose their health care. And that was it. They moved on to how unlikable Warren has been. By the time I could fire up Twitter and compose something, the time was well past. Yeah, bless his heart, little Stephen Ratner was the only one who was willing to go to bat around that table. And he looked at Donnie Deutsch and said, "You know, why is it we always only talk about likability in terms of women?" And Donnie Deutsch blustered and fussed. "Well, I didn't say it because she's a woman. I mean, she just, like, reminds me of a..." You know what she reminds me of? The best teacher you ever had. She doesn't have a nasal voice. She doesn't come across as though she's chiding anyone. Yeah, she got, when I was in Philadelphia, Chris and I sat there and listened to her speak to the crowd there at Netroots Nation, and it was electrifying. And at one point in time, an immigrants group got their banner up and blocked everybody's view and started chanting and screaming at her as if she was the enemy. She handled them better than the best comedian handles a heckler, and told them how she wanted to know about their issue and how she wanted to do something about their issue and about how she had a plan and was ready to go on the issue. And so then they, not so quietly but peacefully, carried their banner across the room and chanted and sang their way out, and she moved on. The same thing was done to her recently in a hall where she was speaking to a group of African American students, and some people stood up in the background, in the back of the room, and started screaming and chanting at her. It was the same thing. I honor you for your struggle and what you're doing to make things better. Let's solve this together. But to hear Donnie Deutsch tell it, she was saying, "Now, class, we will all stay after school and write 6,000 times, 'I will not vote Republican.'" The minute that came out of Deutsch's mouth, I knew he sort of halfway regretted saying it. And I immediately heard all of the filthy, vile shit that was said about Hillary Clinton over the course of that campaign. Meanwhile, James in Illinois says, "It's the $30 million CEO's paycheck. And they're shilling for each other." Oh, yeah, they are. Meanwhile, Lady B notes, "When you said how they gazed in wide wonder at this remarkable man, I thought of George Thorogood. And they gazed in wide wonder at the joy they had found. The head nurse spoke up. She said, 'Just leave this one alone. I'm here to tell you, honey, he's Trump to the bone. Ba-na-na-na-na. Trump to the bone. Ba-na-na-na-na.'" I added the ba-na-na-na-na. It could also be a da-na-na-na-na, but I like bananas. Busy little evening, as far as an evening before Thanksgiving goes. Apparently, Richard Spencer, formerly the Secretary of the Navy, is not willing to go as quietly as or skulk away the way James Mattis did. And so folks who opened up the Washington Post today found him on the op-ed page, where he wrote about the president meddling in the disciplinary case against convicted war criminal Eddie Gallagher. Richard Spencer wrote, and apparently Richard Spencer is all out of fucks to give because he will be attacked for this. He said, it is highly irregular for a secretary of the Navy, in his case, to become deeply involved in most personnel matters. Normally, military justice works best when senior leadership stays far away. A system that prevents command influence is what separates our armed forces from others. Our system of military justice has helped build the world's most powerful navy. Good leaders get promoted, bad ones get moved out, and criminals are punished. We are effective overseas not because we have the best equipment, but because we are professionals. Our troops are held to the highest standards. We expect those who lead our forces to exercise excellent judgment. The soldiers and sailors they lead must be able to count on that. Earlier this year, Gallagher was formally charged with more than a dozen criminal acts, including premeditated murder, which occurred during his 8th deployment overseas. He was tried in a military court in San Diego and acquitted in July of all charges except one count of wrongfully posing for photographs with the body of a dead Islamic State fighter. The jury sentenced him to 4 months, the maximum possible, because he had served that amount of time waiting for trial. He was released. Then he started driving nails. Spencer did. President Trump involved himself in the case almost from the start. That begs a question. How did this incurious imbecile even know about Eddie Gallagher's case? Well, why? Because there is always a fully funded white-wing media out there that will elevate to praise status any punk, any thug, any vicious, violent jackass who has made a mockery of any of whatever concepts remain of American military honor. And so they bark about it and howl about it and mule and puke over it. And that's the kind of stuff that Julius Sleaser dines out on. President Trump involved himself in the case almost from the start. Before the trial began in March, I received two calls from the president asking me to lift Gallagher's confinement in a Navy brig. I pushed back twice because the presiding judge, acting on information about the accused's conduct, had decided that confinement was important. Eventually, the president ordered me to have him transferred to the equivalent of an enlisted barracks. I came to believe that Trump's interest in the case stemmed partly from the way the defendant's lawyers and others had worked to keep it front and center in the media. Ta-da! Once the conviction was handed down, Gallagher voluntarily put in to retire. On November 14th, partly because the president had already contacted me twice, I sent him a note asking him not to get involved in these questions. The next day, White House counsel Pat Cipollone called me and said the president would remain involved. Jesus. The pettifogging lawyer tells tells the Secretary of the Navy to fuck off. Shortly thereafter, I received a second call from Cipollone, who said the president would order me to restore Gallagher to the rank of chief. This was a shocking and unprecedented intervention in a low-level review. It was also a reminder that the president has very little understanding, very little, I would argue, none. Very little understanding of what it means to be in the military, to fight ethically, or to be governed by a uniform set of rules and practices. He says, we must now move on and learn from what has transpired. The public should know that we have extensive screening procedures in place to assess the health and well-being of our forces. But we must keep fine-tuning those procedures to prevent a case such as this one from happening again. Well, this one and the other thugs that he's pardoned. More importantly, Americans need to know that 99.9% of our uniformed members always have and always are and always will make the right decision. Our allies need to know that we remain a force for good and to please bear with us as we move through this moment in time. What he means by as we move through this moment in time is until this monstrosity is no longer president of the United States. Randy in PA says, I have a nasally voice. A good percentage of the population has nasally voices. Nah, we've talked on the phone, Randy. You don't have a nasal voice, buddy. No. Our buddy Lottie says, subject line, Donnie douchebag. Don't forget to point out that it was Donnie douchebag that said on Morning Joe that he would vote for Trump if Bernie was nominated. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Happy Thanksgiving, Lottie. It's funny. Ferg was just the other day talking about that magnificent sweet potato pie with the brandy that you sent the recipe 4 years ago. Not 4 years ago. The recipe 4 years ago. Things like that remain in the, I guess, the palate or the taste buds, the sense memory. It was delicious. Lottie, are you doing the salt cod for Thanksgiving? You're going to wait till Christmas on that. I can't remember. I keep wanting to try his salt cod recipe, but I just the opportunity never presents itself. I hope so. I hope maybe because they carry it over at Kroger's. I'd love to try it, but it is not something to be undertaken lightly, you know, just like marriage. And it's nowhere near as nasty as, say, lutefisk. James in Illinois, Gallagher and the Don, they hate all the same people. And Donnie can't stand for anyone to insert themselves between him and one of his natural-born killers. I mean, these are all tells. Whether it's Erdogan or Duterte or this punk-ass war criminal, those are the people he likes. Those are the people he respects. Oh, and remember how the other day Rudy Giuliani said he wasn't worried about being arrested or charged because he had an insurance policy. And then, of course, yesterday, well, Nitwit Nero chucked him under the bus, saying he never sent Rudy to Ukraine to dig up dirt on the Bidens. Well, according to Reuters, Rudy's own lawyer, a fellow by the name of Robert Costello said he insisted to Rudy Giuliani that he, Rudy, call Trump on the toot suite, also on the phone, over the last 24 hours to say that his line about having an insurance policy of thrown under the bus was just a joke. It was just a joke. Costello said, I shouldn't joke. He's not a funny guy. I told him 10,000 comedians are out of work and you make a joke. It doesn't work that way. Rudy's a great guy. He's not funny. Now, why do you reckon Rudy's lawyer would advise his client to do something like that? Wonder who's got what. Or maybe that wasn't for Nitwit Nero's benefit, but was to try to throw up a smoke screen to anyone who might be interested in knowing what the smoke screen was, or what the insurance policy was. But that cat's out of the bag, because he already said it, and yesterday, Trump put him under the old Greyhound. And the fact that Trump said, Rudy's a great guy, well, that's the kiss of death with him. Just like he said of Mick Mulvaney, Mick's doing a great job. Mick is awesome. Mick is wonderful. I love Mick. That means Mick is not going to be in the White House for very much longer. Oh, and a little breaking news today about Gordo. You know, Gordon Sondland, that well-meaning gajillionaire who just wanted... all his buddies had ambassadorships, and he wanted one, too. Now, granted, his wife advised him, don't get anywhere near this shit. You don't need the grief. You don't need the job. And you better go testify if you want to stay married and don't want to lose half of everything. Or something to that effect. Well, as of today, ProPublica says that three women claim that they have been subjects of sexual misconduct by Gordo. Now, this was, of course, before he became U.S. bought the U.S. ambassadorship to the European Union with $1 million or so donation to Trump's inauguration fund. It was before that. Maybe Julius Sleaser knew that. Maybe that's kind of why he decided he liked Gordo, that they were simpatico. One potential business partner said that Sondland took her to tour a room in one of his hotels and then grabbed her face and tried to kiss her. And then when she rebuffed his efforts, he decided not to invest in her business. And then I guess because the millionaires just do this, I can't imagine why. Somebody who used to work with Gordo said that he, in the delicate language of journalism, exposed himself to her while they were transacting some sort of business. And she even fell over the back of a couch trying to get away from it, from him. Now, she worked for him, and after she said no, later she got a phone call from him in which he screamed at her about her job performance. And then there's the woman 27 years younger than Gordo, who wanted to talk about a potential job with him. So he shoved himself up against her and kissed her. She shoved him away, and then all of a sudden he stopped being willing to help her with a job. All three women told people contemporaneously about the events. ProPublica does a pretty good job with this sort of stuff. All the events ended less than 10 years ago, and they cover a span of about 7 years. Gordo, on the other hand, issued a statement. You'll recall that Gordo has a habit of issuing statements that then he has to have his recollection refreshed. But his first statement says, "In decades of my career in business and civic affairs, my conduct can be affirmed by hundreds of employees and colleagues with whom I've worked in countless circumstances." That's like saying, well, I've worked with hundreds of people, and there are hundreds of people that can say that I never shoved them up against a wall and tried to kiss them. Well, the fact that you didn't do that to hundreds of people doesn't mean you didn't do it to three. "These untrue claims of unwanted touching and kissing are concocted." Gordo, buddy, you're in the hands of the goddess of irony right now. You need a better proofreader. You ought not use the word concocted. "And I believe coordinated for political purposes. They have no basis in fact, and I categorically deny them." Now, there is an interesting angle there. Who has an interest? Cui bono? In terms of discrediting Gordon Sondland. Hint, he's done a lot worse than Gordo is alleged to have done. And he lives in the White House and has a gorgeous chest. Then from Gordo's lawyer, "Notably, what each of these three women share in common is that they pursued Ambassador Sondland for financial and personal gain, an investment, a job, and insurance brokerage work, and he declined their proposals." That's a lawyer by the name of Jim McDermott. "Given the timing of your intended story, a reasonable conclusion to be drawn is that you are attempting to affect Ambassador Sondland's credibility as a fact witness in the pending impeachment inquiry. Given the politically charged climate in which current events are unfolding, some might consider this to be veiled witness tampering." See, there's a clue. Who engages freely in witness tampering? I'm not saying it didn't happen, because there's always something. Anybody who's ever read Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men knows that quote. There's always something. "Man is conceived in sin and dieth in iniquity. From the stink of the deity to the stench of the grave, there is always something." And this goes back to a Day of the Girl luncheon in Seattle, hosted by a regional nonprofit called Girls, Inc. They say that they want to inspire all girls to be strong, smart, and bold. And at the Day of the Girl luncheon in Seattle, shortly the day after Sondland testified, Nicole Vogel was the speaker. And she told her Sondland story, and she named him. She's told the story to various outlets and publications. Again, you can read more about it at ProPublica. Ew, Sondland, writes Darlene in Connecticut. Going in for the smooch? Exposing himself? There's that nauseated and vomiting emoji. I fear you may be confusing Gordy's wife if he's still married with Bill Taylor's wife. Bill actually respects his wife enough to seek her and take seriously her input, and he mentioned her during his opener. No, I'm not. There was a story out there that Gordon Sondland's wife told him to come clean and mentioned the fact that she's a Democrat and he's a Republican. I think you can find it if you dig around out there. Meanwhile, going back to the healthcare story, Stephen, New York writes, oh, me, call on me, I got it. Donald Trump wanted to take $160 million off of healthcare, or 160 million people off healthcare. That'd be the guy. Yep. Ron and Raleigh with a question. Please explain, what is it about these wealthy mofos that believe that if they whip out their dingus, a woman will dive for it in a swoon? Oh, well, there goes dinner in the mountain time zone, Ron. It was bound to happen. What is it about these wealthy mofos that believe that if they whip out their dingus, a woman will dive for it in a swoon? Or dive for it in a cocktail dress, for that matter, or maybe just jeans and a t-shirt. There are women who will do it for a fair flat rate. Put the money on the nightstand. Donnie Dump said he didn't know the man. People always give me $1 million, even though I don't know him. Happens all the time. And I can't answer the question, Ron. I'm not going to get up on some moral high horse. There's always, the goddess of all irony is always watching. And long ago I was taught never to criticize another individual lest I, in the same circumstances, behave even worse. It comes to mind from time to time. But, well, no. Maybe it's just underreported, all the non-millionaires who do this kind of thing. I mean, you can get busted for, like, being drunk and pissing on a dumpster, and they'll say that you exposed yourself. But generally, that's between you and the dumpster. And the cop who happens along. But for the most part, I don't know, Ron. Maybe you and I just live boring plebeian lives, and we don't run with that high power set that feels like they've got the privilege to whip out their collective penai whenever the moment strikes. Hard to say. So listen, a reminder. We will have Thanksgiving on the front porch tomorrow evening, beginning at the regular time, and it will go for the regular 3 hours. I look forward to it. I hope we will hear many tales of fantastic. If we had 3 hours of just salivation-inducing food porn, that would be fine by me. But we'll be here. And by we, I mean all of us. The community. Tomorrow evening. Probably the only live progressive broadcasting that'll be on the air tomorrow evening. But I think we'll be the better for having been here. For now, it's time to shut down the program, turn everything around, and set the controls for the Heart of the Sun or the Molloy Campfire, as the case may be. And if you want to listen into that hour, and I hope you will, well, tune in via Progressive Voices, the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, and I'll be there in about an hour. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air, who keep everything going. with your kind contributions, either as subscribers or as a la carte contributors. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this program, however you so do, over yea verily the years. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Later.